Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Let me remind you that we are streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and iTunes and other places. And we're glad you're here. We have a great show today. It has some interesting guests. Our guests today are Eric and Robin Gagnon of We Sell Restaurants. And they're no strangers to the radio business. They have their own program. I'll let them tell you about that. Welcome to Driven to Business, Eric and Robin.
Thank you so much.
Hey, tell us about your program.
Okay, well, we are, like you, on Biz 1190 on Sundays at 1 p.m., and we are also on Saturdays on Talk 920. And our show is really designed for those foodies out there, would-be restaurateurs and current restaurateurs, anyone who has a hope and belief or dream about being in the restaurant business, then they can come on to our show where we try to satisfy their appetite for acquisition, feed the need for restaurant reality, and serve up a recipe for business success.
You know, I was going to make a joke and ask you, but you've already blown my chance here. I was going to say they're with We Sell Business, and I was going to ask you what business you're in. but that becomes pretty obvious. Hey, I enjoy talking to people that are sort of in niche businesses. I've had a lot of guests here on Driven to Business. I'm in a niche business that no one outside our business even understands. We're in the electronic motor drive business. But you guys are also in a very narrow niche of business. What prompted you in the beginning to do this as a business?
Eric, you want to take that one?
Yes, absolutely. And let me remind your listeners, too, if they want to listen to our show while they grab a sandwich, our show is Saturdays at noon on Talk 920. So right good lunch break with your sandwich. What happened years ago, about 13 years ago, you know, I was in the banking industry and in Charleston, South Carolina, which is a very unique market for restaurants as well because they have very few franchises, a lot of independent stuff, and I was a commercial lender. And nobody wants to lend money to restaurants. Still to these days, very difficult. And I started learning a little bit about it, and I ran into a guy that was doing that, restaurant brokerage. And he brought me some clients, and we were able to lend some money in very creative ways, in different ways. We didn't use SBA financing or that type of product back then. And we got to keep in touch over the years, and I was very intrigued by it. And one day, I was in corporate America, and we kept in touch over the years, and he said, you know, hey, you know, I was in Atlanta, and he says, Atlanta needs a good restaurant broker. He says, why don't you give that a try? And that's how it came about 13 years ago.
You know, I have some friends that are – I have one very good friend that's actually a more of a generic business broker. And he sells, you know, everything from a Jiffy Lube to a – you know, you name it, about everything. So he's not quite as narrowed down in focus as you are. But I actually like your idea better where you focus in – on one thing, I've bought two businesses. That's something I've done in my life. And we still have them. One of them is in upstate New York, and the other one's in Pennsylvania. They're both very profitable, very, very, very good businesses. I'm glad I did it. So I've been through the process of buying a business, and I know as well as you know, there are times there's always points in the process of doing it. There's a little more involved with that than meets the eye when you suddenly do it. I'm sure you run into that all the time. When somebody wants to buy a business, they get started, and they go, oh, man, I didn't realize what I'm getting into here. Do you run into that?
We do. And, you know, it's one thing I think that's changed dramatically about the business in the last decade since we've been involved is that there are so many places that you can go for really good advice and information, and there's so much knowledge online because the way we really approach it is we try to take a very long view with our customers, and we develop a lot of content. We do a lot of blogging. We do our radio show. We wrote a book, Appetite for Acquisition, in 2012. And so we try to put the knowledge out there so that folks can do that long path to discovery and find their answers so that they don't go into this just cold, waking up one day saying, hey, I'd like to be in the restaurant business. Because, you know, for example, in our book, we've got a whole chapter that says why you shouldn't go into the business, because it really isn't for everyone.
You know, that's a great point. And I have a lot of friends that want to get into businesses. And I always do tell them to visualize what that's really like, not just the beauty of it, but the But what it's actually going to be like to be doing that, and do you really want to do it? I own a little cabin up in North Georgia, and when we first got that, I was going to a local restaurant up there, a nice little local place that all the locals know of, and I got to know the owner, who, as it turned out, had bought it about 5 years before. And as I'm sitting there talking to her after she got to know me a few times, one of the things she asked me, said, "Is there any way you'd want to buy this restaurant?" And I said, "I'm not really in the restaurant business." And she said, and she told me a story that her and her husband had been going up to North Georgia, and they really liked it up there. And they just thought it would be really neat to own a little mom-and-pop restaurant. So they moved up there and did that. She said what she did not anticipate was that, you know, getting up at 5 in the morning every day to cook breakfast. And her husband, in fact, after doing it a few months, decided he didn't like it at all. He took a job back down in Atlanta and left it with her. And I think that's one of those things where they didn't think it, and it wasn't a bad business. It's a pretty good little business there. But they just didn't think it through if it was for them. And I think in a lot of businesses, a lot of us, that we sort of let our entrepreneurial dreams perhaps get ahead of what we really want. And I think that speaks very highly of you guys, that you actually will give people that kind of advice about purchasing a restaurant.
Yeah, I think one of the key things is you got to look at it from one of our agents said it best one time. It's a lifestyle, you know,
right,
getting this business. It's not just a job, or if you like to cook, you know, that doesn't qualify you to own a restaurant. You know, a lot of people think that would be it.
Right.
There's so many other things that goes along with it. Do you enjoy the 100% of the lifestyle, or if not, you're going to have challenges, or you're going to have, you know, family members, like you said, they're going to be surprised. This is not at all what we thought it would be. We thought we were just going to buy a sports bar and show up at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, have a couple of cocktails with the patrons, watch the game with them, and, you know, cook a couple of wings. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Exactly. And while we're talking, if you could let me pull away from your business just for a moment and just sort of talk about the restaurant business in general, how does a restaurant owner, you're bound to see this all the time, how does a restaurant owner make a profit, or how should he ensure that he makes a profit, I guess is a better question.
Well, there's really three metrics that a restaurateur needs to focus in on. Okay, first of all, you've got to build that top-line sales number. But then above and beyond that, you've got to have a laser focus on food costs, because that's your cost of inventory. That's your cost of sales. So you must understand what you're putting on a plate, how much each element of that plate costs you, and what the gross margin is on that. And then the second thing you have to absolutely understand is the labor costs. How many people are on the line? You know, how many, if you've got 17 people in that space and half of them are $2.35 because they're tipped employees, but you still have a contribution that you have to make to the overall payroll for those individuals, and plus what you have on the floor, that labor cost is a fundamental piece. So it's laser focus on food costs, laser focus on labor costs, and then Eric, what is the fixed cost that you really caution people about getting into and getting in over their head?
I mean, it's your rent. I mean, you know, your rent, one the reality with your rent is, you know, once you sign with that lease, it's nowhere but up every year after year after year in most cases. And, you know, you do the math, sometimes people say, 3-5%, that's what landlords are looking for, you know, as a standard raise every year. But if you look at this current year, you know, the National Restaurant Association, their data and Technomic are saying that net sales are going to grow about, net of inflation, about 1%. So if you do the math, if you had 5%, that's 4% less in your pocket that the landlord's going to get. So you really, really have to watch this from day one, and you can control that before signing the lease. Once you sign on, you're on the hook for 5, 10, 15 plus years.
You know, I'm struck hearing you guys talk about that. I was actually making notes as you were talking. We would term it a little bit different in the business I'm in, but it's the exact same concerns. It's a different level, perhaps, and a different use maybe different terminology, but it's the same thing. You've got to measure your top line sales against what your costs are, and there are things people do not take into account: labor cost, and as you said, the cost of having a building, and you know, these days, the first year I was in business, and I was very naive about this, I'll admit this now, I was absolutely shocked when I was told what I owed in taxes at the end of the year, and I was like, oh man, I mean, it just totally blew me. I thought this was going to give me this money. I thought this was my money. And all of a sudden, no, a lot of it is not yours in doing it. Hey, one quick question before the break. I noticed, just again, restaurants, that a lot of restaurants tend to congregate in the same place. You know, you go to a corner and there's a Burger King and a McDonald's and a Taco Bell and a Crystal all facing each other. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. We tell people that because that is going to create this area of congregation where everybody goes, and if the line at Burger King's too long, then they're going to go to the one next door, and they might try the independent. And we often will show restaurant space to individuals, and they go, oh, no, there's too much competition here. But it's just like going into a restaurant. You want to go into a restaurant that's busy, that's active, there's something going on. The same thing, you want to go in that area of town where things are happening. And, you know, you can go somewhere where there's not a lot of competition, but you might be the only person there, and you're just not going to drive a lot of activity. So we always tell people, go where there are some other folks already established.
No, I was just thinking when you said that, my wife and I, we will be going to a restaurant somewhere, let's say just any place. We're going to go there, and we get there, and we see the parking lot is just full. Well, next to it is something else. We say, well, you know, they don't look too busy there. Let's just go there. And that's exactly what you're talking about. That's what happens.
That's right. And have you ever noticed your service is always better at a busy restaurant than it is at a slow restaurant? Just a fact of life. Don't know why, but when you go in a restaurant that's not too busy, then the service just takes forever. And when you go into a restaurant where it's busy and they're crashing and pulling those plates out, you know, everybody's getting that food, moving it back and forth to the tables.
I actually love to watch a really good restaurant. I'm not going to name any right now because I don't know. But there are some restaurants you can go in, and they are humping. I mean, people are moving around with plates. I'm astonished to look back in the kitchen and see what they're doing back there. And I'm thinking, man, for me, I've always wondered, even, you know, as naive as I am, I see these young lady waitresses come out with these giant stacks of dishes on a tray, you know, and if I were doing that, that would be in somebody's lap. And they just come hauling right out of there and swing it down. And I don't know, if maybe they're very stronger than they look or something. I don't know, but I'm always amazed. And I do. It's almost like a great ballet going on there. I love to watch that happening in a restaurant that's successful.
It's exciting to see the energy and the excitement that's happening in a well-run restaurant. I mean, it's no wonder people look at it and go, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be in the hospitality business. You know, think about it. The oldest principle of life is sitting down and breaking bread with someone. As a restaurant owner, you get the opportunity to do that. You get to share in people's celebrations. They come when they're getting married. They come when they're announcing an engagement or something exciting's happening. So their restaurant owners, particularly independent restaurant owners, they'll see entire generations of families grow up in their restaurant, and they'll just keep coming back and celebrating those milestones.
You're exactly right. More to come. More to come here in just a moment on Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're talking with Eric and Robert Gagnon of We Sell Restaurants. They have a restaurant brokerage business, easy for me to say, and they have a radio program both here on Biz 1190 and on Talk 920. Their website is, believe it or not, WeSellRestaurants.com. So go there and check it out. Before the break, we were talking about the energy and so forth taking place in a restaurant. And I think in any business, really, it's kind of fun to see a business that's well-run, where the people there are energized and doing what they're supposed to do. Now, so tell us a moment about your company, We Sell Restaurants. I started to say what makes you unique. I think the unique thing is you sell restaurants. But even within that, what makes you unique?
Well, I think that makes us unique, the fact that we are really a husband and wife team and that we play off each other's strengths. And, you know, we have the greatest partnership in the world, and we're able to work together every day and live that entrepreneurial dream and build our business and make it grow. And, you know, Eric will be the first to tell you, he started in, our basement 10 years ago, and now we're the largest restaurant brokerage firm in the United States. And people come to us because we are so specialized. We understand what it takes to transfer a franchise, to get you into a new restaurant space, or to turn over that independent restaurant. I mean, There are 980,000 restaurants in America, and 20% of them are on the market every single day. So the fact that we have built a whole business process get around that very specialized niche makes our business model very, very unique. And, you know, Eddie, I don't know if you even know this, but that's why we are actually franchising our model.
Oh, I did not notice that. I did notice you were in several cities, or at least you list several cities. I did not realize you were franchising. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I think another big differentiator for us is we're big on educating people. Whether you're a buyer, whether you're a seller, whether you're thinking about buying, whether you're thinking about selling. You know, the book is part of it. The radio show is part of it. But, you know, we also have a team of people outside. Whether you need an accountant, whether you need a lawyer. You know, your lawyer that did a good job on your divorce may not be the best guy to go seek advice when you want to try to buy a restaurant or try to obtain a liquor license. So we have so many resources all around us to help the buyers and sellers make sure that we give them the best chance to succeed. I think that's what makes us very different than just say, hey, you want to buy, you want to sell. Make sure that there's a check for our company at the closing table. You know, we're much more than that. And I think that's really transpired over the years into our success and our knowledge and how we help, you know, people getting into in and out of the business.
You know, in our business, which is, a very narrow little business, and there are a number of competitors in it. And one of the ways that we pull ahead of the pack a bit is through what you had talked about, education, is that we will go into, in our case, it's a completely different business, but it's the same principle. We will go into an engineering firm, for instance, and educate them about power line harmonics or something like that as a lunch and learn or something like that. And we do that free. And as a result of that, you build credibility. You're giving them something of value. And then when they do need electronic motor drives or some expertise in that, they tend to come back and call us. And again, it, for anybody listening, that is a great way to get your company promoted, is don't just strictly make a sales call, but actually give the customer or give the prospect something worthwhile when you're in the middle of doing it. Robin, I was going to ask you this later on, but you raised the issue, so I'll talk to you a little bit about it now. You guys are a married couple working together. And
yes.
I also work with my family. We have a family business, so I'm there with you on that. Talk to us a moment about, for anybody that's doing that, there are obvious advantages to it, but there are also there are some pitfalls for that. What's your advice to anybody that's thinking about that?
Well, I would say that, you know, you have to definitely make sure you're in a partnership with someone that you have the utmost respect and trust for and with. So if that's not your situation, if you're kind of second guess the decision, if you can't really, really be joined at the hip, then it's just like any other partnership. It's going to be doomed to failure. But when you trust the person that you care about, and that also happens to be a family member, then, you know, you're going to walk down this road together and you're only going to get better for it. You know, Eric and I, some of the great benefits, we had to travel over the weekend and we're in the car for 5 hours and we're able to brainstorm ideas and think about things and throw ideas off of one another. And if I were still in corporate America and he was doing his own thing, you know, who knows what we would be talking about. So it brings a lot of passion to your relationship because you have this thing that you're building that's bigger than the two of you and kind of transcends your individual relationship.
It does. There is, though, the part of when if you're in a business partnership with someone you're not married to and you have a disagreement at business, that doesn't go home with you. And you don't, and I know it's a personal experience. If you have a business disagreement with your wife, that does go home with you. And I think it's just I've always enjoyed it. It's worked out very well. But I do think it's one of those things that people, if you're going to do that, you better, and particularly when you're going to get children involved or other family members, you had better have a discussion about that. Okay, this is how we're going to do this. These are going to be the parameters. You know, this person's in this area, this person's in this area, and this person's in this area, and we're not going to make each other mad. And the thing that our family has always said is that our family comes first, not the business. If something has to suffer, it's going to be the business, not the family. And I think those are kinds of things you've got to do if you're going to get that doing. Hey, tell us about your clients, both from a selling and buying standpoint. You know, you not only sell restaurants, you're going to have to find people that want to sell them. How do you find those people?
Well, I mean, it's so many different ways, and over the years, you know, whether it's through networking, through some power partners, through word-to-mouth referrals, through marketing, online marketing, direct marketing, email, you know, to our database. I mean, there's so many different ways that we get people that want to buy, people want to sell. You know, we do offer a free valuation for most people. So a lot of people say, hey, I want to know what my restaurant's worth today. And 99.9% of the time, it's not worth what they're expecting. So, okay, well, how did we get you there? And we can start a discussion. And sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years before, you know, you can even put them into the market to get what they want. But they work with you in that meantime, you know, to get there to what they want. So we are our sellers, you know, and then we've been in business, like Robin said, over 10 years, a lot of repeat business. A lot of people have known about us and have seen us out, you know, and about in the industry. So we've been fortunate that a lot of people are seeking out our advice, our help, and our expertise. So we've been very good about that. And we go out, like you talk about working together, you know, one of us is always kind of out you know, in all kinds of events and industry. So we're looking at a lot of different ways to get leads. And I think most people out there, you know, looking to get in business, whether it's restaurants or any kind of business, you have to have many, many, I guess, you know, holes to fish from, you know, so you get, you know, you never know when the next fish is coming from.
Yeah, I always think that I always view marketing as a, at least from my experience, it's a parallel experience. I've always thought putting, at least in my experience in the past, is putting all eggs in one basket rarely works well. And a lot of today, especially, I think, with the social media the way it is and so forth, there are a lot of indirect paths to get customers and prospects. And occasionally, even when we talk to a customer or prospect and ask them, how did they find us, they have a hard time telling us, well, I heard about you here, and then I saw this, and I was reading this. And you know, which one of those things triggered them, they don't know. And so I think we've all got to sort of hang in there and do that carefully, but just be sure we're out there. I love a saying by Zig Ziglar that said, you know, no one ever stumbles over anything sitting down. So you just got to get out there and move around in the marketplace and turn over rocks, basically, and see what's under some of those rocks.
I believe also be adventurous and try at that all of the above approach and then measure it. Look at it very statistically and quantitatively. What is the return on investment for whatever you're doing? And, you know, I can tell you that what we did the first year that we were in business versus what we do now is dramatically different. I mean, it's terrifying to think about it, but we would put an ad in the AJC in the business for sale section every Sunday and wait for the phone to ring on Monday and talk to those clients. And so we went from, you know, probably an investment of about 70% of our marketing budget in print to 0% today, and everything to your point, there's social media, there is, you know, our online landing pages that drive people to pick up our content, a radio show, making personal appearances, all kinds of other ways that bring clients to us today that don't have anything to do with that old-timey print ad.
You know, on top of all that, these are exciting times, aren't they? We are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business, talking with Eric and Robin Gagnon of We Sell Restaurants. Eric, let's say after talking with you, and perhaps via either I came to you via your website or I met you somewhere, whatever. And after talking with you, I really have decided I really do want to buy a restaurant, and I'm qualified to do it. Walk me through the process. How do we do that?
Well, you start with the fun part. You can go online to our website, of course, at wesellrestaurants.com. We may make some recommendation to you on some listings that may be good opportunities that we feel for you. And then you can go read about them. You can sign an online non-disclosure agreement electronically. And once you do that on our website, which is free, you just register on the website. It's a legal document basically that says that you're not going to talk to anybody about it. And you can go and observe that business. You usually get the name, the address, and some extra pictures of the business. So you can do that 24/7 at your leisure. And they say, oh, yeah, I really like this restaurant. I love pizza, and this is nearby my home. I've actually been to this restaurant, but I'm going to go there undercover and check it out again. So you go there, and people go on their own, and they'll go have something to eat, something to drink, once, twice, three, four, five times. I mean, it depends on the client and what their preference is. And then usually once they do what we call the site visit, then they'll give us some feedback, either via phone, via email, or maybe they'll come to our office, and we'll meet with them again and talk to them about, okay, well, here's what I really like about this. This is what scared me. And this is where also now I want to know more about, you know, you said they're making $40,000 a year. How do I know that? And we go on to that process. So there's a lot of back and forth discussions. They may say, I want to see another one. So they go maybe see two or three, four or five. Some clients see a lot more because they can discover on their own on our website as they go along. But then we can get the guidance to them to guide them through the process.
And I'll just interject here, too, because one thing that happens, Eddie, that's a little different because, you know, you may or may not know in the restaurant business, sometimes the numbers can be a little squishy and they may not be all buttoned up. But we kind of have taken a very strong approach to building a tool in the industry called the business analysis tool, where we literally go through and say occupancy should be this, food cost should be this, and then we weigh whatever restaurant you're looking at, layer in their financials, and give someone about a 20-page financial package on the business so that they have something that they can thoughtfully walk through and do due diligence, so it's not just an estimate or a guess at what those numbers look like. Because at the end of the day, even though they may be emotional about it, this is a decision that's going to impact their lifestyle. It's going to impact their family and their income, and they need to make sure that they get it right. So we're going to give them all the tools that they need in order to do that.
You know, as naively optimistic as I tend to be about things, I think if I were coming to you, it may well be you would talk me out of this, but if I were coming to you, I would be looking for a restaurant that perhaps was underperforming. I may go visit a place and say, you know, this is a good restaurant. It's in a good location, but they're not doing good customer service here. They're not doing some things that ought to be done. This business could be a lot, you know, they haven't updated the inside of the place in a long time. And I would look at it like, okay, this is a bit distressed, but I could perhaps because of that, I could get it at a good price. And I believe I could go in there and then using, you know, just putting some basic business tools to work, turn that into a success. And I guess the other side of the coin would be someone that did not want to do that. It's actually looking for an ongoing, very successful business that could just continue. Do you find both kinds of clients?
Oh. Yes, we do. Yes. Go ahead, Ron.
No, go ahead. Jump in there, Eric.
We do. You're exactly right. I think you summed it up very well here. It's you know, we have people that says, hey, I am in corporate America, kind of a corporate refugee type guy that says, I have a wife, two kids, I live in the suburbs, I'm a member of the country club, and I need to make at least $100,000 a year, and I want out of corporate America, and I want to own my own business. And this guy will pay a premium. This man or woman will pay a premium for that business that's making, you know, $100,000+. Then you got some people maybe in the business. Maybe they work as a server. Maybe they work as a chef, as a line cook, or somewhere as a manager. And they are now ready to get on their own. It says, hey, I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of knowledge. I am looking for that underperforming business where I can buy at a better price, but I know I can fix it, and I'm not afraid of putting the hours in and to make it a better business. So we do have anything between the spectrum of these two. You know, sometimes very successful operators are also looking, hey, I want a really good location. I don't even care if it's not open yet. I don't care if it's a closed restaurant space because I know that our concept will do great in this area. Just find me a space. So that's also another option that we have for people.
And that's great because I think there are, you're exactly right, I think a lot of us in business approach it a bit differently. And it doesn't mean that anybody's approach is wrong. It just means it may fit your personality in the way that you like to do things. Hey, change topic just a bit. I was on your website. And I saw on your site an article, I think you'd been interviewed for this, where you were talking about restaurant etiquette. And this is totally off the subject, I know. But let's talk about that just for a moment, because everybody, if you've ever been out to eat more than once, you've had some diner do something next to you that just was completely inappropriate in a restaurant and just kind of fouled up your meal. I think you had given a few lists of things in there people should not do in restaurants, or at least had alluded to that.
We did. Okay, so we had actually interviewed a few specialists in the industry, and one of them who had written a book on children said specifically, listen, if I couldn't control my kids, it's time to pay the bill and go home. And we had a great discussion about cell phones. I mean, those of us who end up in a great restaurant and that's sort of our respite for the day, that's where we want to spend some time with the person that matters to us, and then we get in there and we've got somebody who's bullying us with a cell phone in his ear the whole time. How annoying that is. So, yeah, put that cell phone down.
It's interesting you should say that. Those are the things that annoy me. And let me start with the kids. I'm a granddad, and I love kids, and kids like me. And I get along good with kids, and I'm fully aware that not every kid is well behaved all the time. But it doesn't change the fact that if you have a kid that's out of control, and all kids occasionally become inconsolable for whatever reason, it's fine. Just get up and go outside with them. It's there's nothing wrong with that. Just pick them up and walk outside and recognize the other diners around you. You left one thing out that also annoys me a great deal. And in fact, it's the only, I don't think I've ever said anything to another diner in a restaurant except about this, is if someone is just being ridiculously rude to a waiter or a waitress, that just annoys me to no end. Like, knock it off, okay? Okay, your food, your hamburger wasn't cooked the way you wanted or something, fine. Send the thing back and shut up. I mean, that just drives me crazy. to sit there and loudly berate a waiter or a server or the cook or whatever in front of everybody. It's like, this is, you know, you're not saying much about the waiter. You're talking about yourself when you're being rude and obnoxious in public like that.
Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, who hasn't walked a mile in those shoes where, I mean, I don't know anyone who hasn't at some time or another waited tables. And just to remember how tough it is to get the order from the kitchen and manage the drinks and keep everybody else refilled and then get out there with the food. I mean, these guys, you know, we're notorious over tippers because I feel as though, you know, somebody that's doing this job, they deserve something extra for putting up with everybody that's out there, including me, even though I do my best not to be rude in a restaurant.
You know, I've told some of my friends, I was in the Coast Guard for 4 years, and, you know, we had a rule in there, and this is generally a rule in the military, is you never yell at a cook, ever, mm-hmm. because they're out of sight fixing your food. And so you really don't want to make one mad at you. But I've often thought that applies in a restaurant. Somebody will berate a waiter, then he takes their food out of their sight back to the kitchen to get it fixed.
Exactly.
It's like, are you crazy? What you just did?
You had to think about it, but, you know, it's something that you should consider before you start berating somebody. And it is a team effort. You know, the waiter is who you have the interaction with. There's a lot of people involved. And, you know, for different reasons, it could be a challenge. And, you know, maybe you just excuse yourself. If you can't get service you want, use common sense. Maybe it says, hey, you know what? I'll come back another day. Seems today you guys are struggling. I love your place. Just walk away. Don't be, like you said, you know, very rude or obnoxious or be very difficult, because I think you may not get what you're looking for, and you may get something that you even not even thinking.
Exactly. So. Without making anybody sick, I'll just leave it there. But you're exactly right. I've heard some tales. And the Coast Guard, I was actually friends with a cook there who told me some stories that made me never want to eat again. But nonetheless, you know, when I was a kid, the restaurant business does appear, at least from my perspective, to be really growing. When I was a kid, we almost never ate out, and neither did almost anyone I know, except on special occasions. But now, a lot of people eat the majority of their meals out, particularly married couples. The age of my wife and I, you know, with no kids at home, we don't cook at home that much. Now, we may just eat a sandwich, but if we don't do that, we will go out somewhere and eat. So it is a growing business, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the statistics that are put out by the National Restaurant Association, just to give you a couple of numbers, in 1990, restaurant industry sales in billions were $239.3 billion. In 2014, they are forecast to be $683 billion. So that's just in, 15 short years? And if you look at restaurant share of the food dollar, just in 1995, of all the dollars spent on food in a family, 25% went to a restaurant, and today that's 47%. So restaurant, you know, people are eating out much, much more than they did even 10 or 15 years ago.
Another interesting point for the listeners is that Atlanta's got the most meals eaten out per capita in the United States. It's almost at 66%, so almost 2 out of 3 meals in the Atlanta market, people eat out. We love to eat out in the Atlanta market.
66%, that's amazing.
Yep.
I'm probably right in the middle of that demographic, quite frankly, but that's still just overall, that's kind of amazing.
It is, and that's people with kids and no kids. I mean, you know, everybody loves to eat out around here, and it's great. It's great for the industry, and that's a great way to get with people and spend some quality time.
I travel a little bit, and you know, you're on the road going somewhere, in particular if I'm going to a small town. You know, even today in a small town, there's always a chain there. There's a Zaxby's or a, you know, Applebee's or a Cracker Barrel, something. You know, there's some chain there. But I really prefer to eat, if I can, at more local mom-and-pop places. Now, when I was growing up, I was always told you would go where the truck drivers went. I've since decided that's not the greatest advice. But Just tell me, you guys are experts. How would you pick, if you're in a town you didn't know anything about and you was wanted to eat at a local place, how would you pick it?
Well, now you just check your smartphone and see what people are talking about. You know, you
Good
can
point.
Get on Twitter. We have so many followers on our Twitter handle, which is at Sell Restaurants, that we just get on Twitter and go, hey, I'm headed into XYZ town. Where's the place to eat? And that's the great piece of social media is that, you know, people are going to come back to us, people in the industry, people who follow the industry, and they're going to say, hey, try whatever. It's right there on the side of the road as you come in from 95. So that's what I love about social media. You can get instant recommendations.
That is a great piece of advice, and I think applies not only to your case, but to almost all of us. And honestly, as silly as it is, I hadn't actually thought of that. It's kind of ridiculous. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, streaming live on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com. By the way, there are links to We Sell Restaurants on eddiemayfield.com, plus you can go to wesellrestaurants.com. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. We're glad you're here talking with Eric and Robin Gagnon with We Sell Restaurants. As I was kidding earlier, we could ask them what they do, but I think you can figure it out. You know, we were talking right before the break about the idea of picking out a local restaurant, and you had made a very wise and very good observation that these days you can just ask your friends on Twitter or probably Facebook or anything else. And, of course, there's also Yelp and many, many other sites you can go to. But, you know, that does bring up another point. In today's world, and this is true in our business and it's true in almost everybody's business, if you mistreat a customer in today's world or if a person goes to a restaurant and has a bad experience there, now then maybe they're not rude enough to say anything about it to anybody there. They're going to be fairly polite. Boy, when they get home, they go on whatever, Twitter, Facebook, Yelp, you know, you name it, and or just email their friends. And they say, you know, I was over at so-and-so, and the food's terrible over there. That is hard to overcome, which does mean that when you're dealing with people, you had better, in today's socially connected world, you had better do a good job.
It's terrifying. It really is for a restaurant operator. And, you know, unfortunately, you have to weigh everything that comes out through social media with a grain of salt when, you know, there's a negative experience. You know, what was going on in the restaurant that day, or is it a personal vendetta, or, you know, really what's happening. And what we have found is the most successful restaurateurs are right on top of that social media, and they're reaching out to whoever that person is and making it right immediately, or at least making an effort, because often it is just someone wants to vent and be heard, and if they feel as though they get to the source, they get to that restaurant owner or operator, and they're paying attention, then they will back down from whatever that is, and then you could turn it around, hopefully, into, man, I just heard from the owner, and he said this, I'm going back Friday night. Anybody want to come? That's the ultimate best outcome.
You know, you go to anything that you're going to buy these days, and you go to I do this just if I'm buying a washing machine, I do the same thing. You go look at the product, and then you, like on whatever site you're on looking at it, and then you look at the reviews. And if, you know, the reviews will be 98%, 99% positive. There is always going to be one or two in there that didn't like it. And you really do have to like look at that carefully with perhaps a grain of salt and say, well, if everybody else, you know, if 99 people thought it was great and one person thought it was not great, well, maybe that person didn't plug it in properly or something. I mean, you know, I mean, there is always that. You got to weigh with it. I kind of call that the eBay effect. You know, eBay, when it first started so many years ago, eBay is the ultimate self-regulating thing. You know, our company actually has an eBay store as part of our business, and I'll tell you, you had better do a good job, because if you don't, somebody's going to go on there and say something bad about you, and you had better deal with it. But eBay's got the other side. If you're a buyer on eBay and you continually give people bad ratings, they're going to rate you as a bad buyer, and people won't sell to you. So it sort of corrects itself over time, and so you have to be careful who you're complaining about on there too, and make sure it's legitimate. And that's not the only thing you ever say on there is a negative thing. Go ahead.
I think restaurants are very difficult too, because I mean, you know, you're talking about taste here. You know, we all have individual taste,
right?
And it's not because everybody's. You can take a very famous restaurant everybody loves. You may not like it just because your taste buds. You know, for you it doesn't taste as well. So it's also very difficult for a restaurant to get 100% or something like that, because it may just be that you just don't like that kind of food. Maybe it is too spicy for you. But 99% of people are liking that flavor profile. So you can't win everybody. And again, you got to look at it from a, Robin said, you know, one-on-one. But you're not going to win everybody in the food business. It's too subjective of a product to have, you know, it's like a washing machine. Everybody wants their clothes to come out clean. That's the main goal.
Right. Let's go back and let me give you guys a chance to toot your own horn again here for a moment. We've already talked about your business quite a bit, but why would I come? You'd mentioned the AJC, and there are a lot of other things, as you know, that say businesses for sale. There are a gazillion sites online to do that with. Why would I come to a broker like you instead of just hunting a restaurant on my own?
Oh, my goodness. Please don't do that. Because for most buyers, the services of a restaurant broker don't cost you anything.
Right.
Remember, the seller is paying the commission on the transaction. So why wouldn't you have the best of the best, you know, a major league player out there representing your best interests and helping you think of things that you never would think of on your own and anticipate issues? You know, most of my clients have bought or sold one or two restaurants in their lifetime, and Eric and I between us have helped people buy or sell close to 1,000 restaurants. So whose knowledge base do you really want in your corner?
I agree with that. You know, even the business that I bought, I didn't start off using the services of an outside person, but about in the middle of the transaction, I decided I was in over my head in a couple of areas, particularly in some financial areas that I was really not knowing where to believe these figures I'm looking at or not. And I actually pulled in a business broker type to help me get in the middle of this and figure it out. And actually, I paid him because I did not want to spend all that money foolishly. So I actually agree with you. Many of us that run businesses, even those of us that run successful businesses, we don't buy businesses all that often. And we can be, you can get a little overwhelmed by the process. And also, if someone, in fact, is hiding something from you, or even if they're not hiding it, if they just lack the expertise to give you the real figures you really need, I think having someone that does this all the time is a great asset to pull in just as an outside party to help you get that done.
Yeah, I think, Eddie, if you think about role-playing, you want to buy a business, I'm selling my business. Okay, Eric, I'm buying your business. Great. We don't know what to do next. So we both call our lawyers, and my lawyers will say, sure, Eric, bring me a check for $5,000. I'll write you a contract. And then what happened, he's going to write a contract that's going to have everything to protect me. You're going to look at it, and you're going to say, well, Eric, this is not going to work. This is all for one your side. Let me get this to my lawyer. And first thing you know, you don't even have a meeting of the minds, basically, besides the fact that we want to buy and sell the business, and we're going to be $20,000 in legal fees, and you think you're saving money by not using a broker. Which
that is exactly what happened to me, Eric, believe it or not.
See?
We had attorneys. I had an attorney do something. The other guy selling the business had an attorney do something, and it was both. The attorneys wrote what looked like an antagonistic piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
To go back at it, it looked like we're suddenly enemies. And I told the attorney, I said, I don't hate this guy. I'm not trying to do this guy in. I don't think he's trying to do me in. And he told me the same thing. He said, I can't believe this. So we basically threw those pieces of paper away and got a business broker involved to help us just negotiate what we both actually wanted out of the deal. And once you do that, well, then it all starts falling in place for you.
Absolutely.
Do you have a lot of competition in what you do?
We actually don't. There are a lot of brokers out there, general business brokers, and you know, there are some folks who specialize, but you know, in terms of listing counts and gross commission income, we're the largest restaurant broker now in the United States. And when we look at general business brokers, I mean, they're selling a car wash today, a convenience store tomorrow, and something in the restaurant world the next day. We don't really view that person as a competitor, because mostly those listings go unsold and they end up coming back to us over time anyway. It really does require that you have somebody who knows the intricacies of this business inside out to be very successful with you in helping you buy or sell a restaurant.
And that's a great position to be in. A little, again, I like the idea of a niche business where I think anyone with the idea of being in business, if you can find a niche to work in, it sure is easier to do it. In about 30 seconds, and you've already mentioned that you guys are beginning to sell franchises. What's the future going to look like for We Sell Restaurants?
Well, we would like to see a franchise office of We Sell Restaurants in every state. The demand that we are getting from our program and services online is telling us that people need dedicated specialists that understand how to price this business model, understand how to find the buyers, attract them, and bring them into opportunities. Franchise resales are peaking and will continue to peak over the next 10 years. So the opportunity is unlimited. So it is a great time to come on board with our group and become a franchisee of We Sell Restaurants. We'll teach you our business process, our model, and help you be successful.
By the way, you can find them at WeSellRestaurants.com. You guys have been great guests. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here every week at 11 o'clock on Biz 1190, Atlanta's Business Radio. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.